You're listening to the Periodic Table of Awesome. Join our regular team and maybe a few special guests as they give you the lowdown on movies, TV shows, games, or just whatever they want to talk about. It's the best of geek from week to week, live on Twitch and direct in your ears via the podcast.
My name is Jim Henson, and I'm a puppeteer.
Sesame Street.
The Muppets.
Dark Crystal.
Labyrinth.
Jim created out of innocence.
He showed people the good in all of us.
Is this a 9-to-5 job?
Yeah. Yeah. It's every moment of one's life kind of job, those things.
Why are there so many songs about rainbows and what's on the other side?
From a very early age, he had the feeling that he was here for a purpose.
Holy.
Characters come about from many different ways.
It was my mother's coat and a ping pong ball.
That's how it all started.
He had so many ideas and so many things he wanted to do. His inner life must have been sparkling.
The space he gave to an expression of imagination, I see that in everything that he did.
I love you.
I love you too.
Thanks.
Rainbows are visions, but only illusions.
There was nothing that Jim didn't entertain.
And everything was getting a little bit bigger.
Becoming famous was what he wanted, that there was an innocence getting lost. Was gonna impact his relationship with us and everything, and that was complex.
He wanted to do more than is humanly possible.
That idea that time could run out,
it was just unthinkable.
If Jim was here, I just have to thank him.
Someday we'll find it, the rainbow connection, the lover, the dreamer, and me.
Hi ho, everybody, and welcome to the Periodic Table of Awesome! thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. Why do you two look so weird?
Why are you called Queenie the Frog? You're not a frog.
Hey, that's a racist comment, and I really do not appreciate what you're saying here.
It's speciest, but okay.
Oh, wow. Well, actually, you're absolutely correct. The unfortunate thing here is that there's something going on with Jill's connection. So currently, the animated puppet is currently significantly more animated than Jill's face.
Excuse you, it's fine on my end.
It's true. Hi, it's so nice to have you both here. Hi, Peter.
Happy Tuesday.
Absolutely. I'm going to stop doing
is it
this.
Is
because...
easy being blue, Quinny, or are you struggling?
Well, I'm not going to lie. I've been a little blue for a while. It's
not easy being blue.
No, it's seasonal affective disorder. It's just something that we go through.
At this stage, the listening audience is very concerned.
Absolutely. So to everybody who's listening on the podcast, Quinny is currently a Muppet. And let's be honest, for a long time, Quinny has been pretty much a Muppet for quite most of his life, let's be honest. Excellent. I'm going to stop doing this, however, because A, the background keeps shitting itself, and B, my arm is killing me. Oh, my God.
Hey.
You know the best part? That just means I was just off screen.
Hey.
I found myself. Just off screen.
Just off screen.
That's my happiness is just off screen. Actually, that's not true because you're both on screen and you are my happinesses.
Oh.
Totally long distance appropriate statement.
Long distance shout out to Dion who's in the chat.
Oh. Hey.
Go and have a holiday, you idiot. Why are you here?
Yeah, aren't you meant to be like, I don't know, hanging out around like Italy or something?
Aren't now he's in the chat being mildly racist.
Which, let's be honest, is what he does when he's here. So no. Oh, no.
Nasty. Oh, he's waiting for the wine tour. Fuck you.
Right. Okay, nice. Classy. What are you doing?
Meanwhile, it's 10 degrees and we're doing a podcast.
Yeah. I do want to shout that out right now. Holy shit, it's cold.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Freezing my ass off.
I got away for a week of it, but I paid with it by getting a cold.
Oh.
Go figure. Go figure. Go to a tropical climb, get a cold, come back. You're in the cold. Like, where's the justice?
Oh. And Jill, as a matter of interest, where was your tropical climb?
Fiji.
Oh, my God. You went to
Fiji. It was beautiful. It was beautiful, but like the diaspora with like the poor people and like the people that work in the resorts was very affecting. I don't think I'd go back to Fiji.
That is one of those things that I always find very difficult when you travel, is you start sort of seeing, like you realize, oh yeah, no, it is a very different world.
Yeah, like the only reason why a lot of the people have the money that they do is the income from white tourists like me going there. And when you leave the resort and you see the way that the people live, it's like, I don't think I want to be a part of this cycle.
Yeah, I can definitely understand that. Well, that was dark.
Anyway, let's talk about puppets.
Yeah, woo, super excited. Many people would probably, anyone who knows me, would probably be going, mm-hmm. So you totally chose this one, didn't you, Quinny? And yes, I did. but it was recommended by Fel, producer, said, mm-hmm. You should totally do that. And I wasn't going to argue.
Yeah.
This is way into my area of passion and love. And, mm-hmm. Therefore, I will struggle to be entirely dispassionate about it. Subjective, yes, yeah, no, totally. But I'm here for it, and I do think there are things that we need to talk about it. So I'm keen to do so.
Yeah.
So first of all, tonight we are talking about Ideas Man, which is a documentary that is on Disney Plus that was directed by Ron Howard.
Yes. And just because you can direct good movies, maybe doesn't mean you can direct documentaries. But
early opinion coming in.
This is I would expect nothing less though, Jill. It's an interesting one. So, okay, where are we all at with Muppets? Do we have any Muppet haters? Oh.
No. I was rejoicing. I was like, I love Muppets.
Excellent. I mean, I'm sure there are people out there who are Muppet haters. I haven't met them.
You probably don't move in the same circles.
No.
No. They're like a circle in a spiral, like a wheel within a wheel.
I mean, Muppets have been a part of all of our lives from early childhood because of Jim Henson. So I think it's kind of hard to separate even for somebody like me who is not exactly a Muppet super fan. It's really hard to separate a deep sense of nostalgia from any of this stuff. And I think that's, you know, part of the appeal and part of what's interesting about it. And, you know, we've spoken about it before because we've done things like reviewed the Dark Crystal series and you know, we've kind of talked before about, you know, for me, I struggle with Muppets the same way I struggle with animation. Serious dramatic contexts. But the Muppets, big part of my childhood, big happy part of my childhood.
Yeah,
you're right. Yeah, I find that fascinating. That you have the same thing with animation, that you need the human element.
I need the facial expressions to be facial expressioning, the way human facial expressions do. Otherwise, I can't connect.
Ooh.
Okay, interesting. I mean, I totally understand that, but at the same time, I find the facial expressions on Muppets, you know, almost always more expressive because they are, like, they're cartoony. So, you know, any time that Kermit does a surprised kind of hangdog thing, and you know, with his hand, you can hear him go, oh, that doesn't fucking work. Sorry. you know, it's bad for audio, even bad for the stream. But, yeah, like, to me, there's something so expressive about it, but at the same time, you know, different strokes for different folks. So what's the first Muppet that you can remember seeing? Was it The Muppet Show or?
It was Sesame Street.
Ah, yes.
I grew up on Sesame Street.
Yeah.
And as much as I tried to deny to the other children that I watched a baby show, I watched Sesame Street. I 100% watched Sesame Street. I love it.
That's right.
Yeah. Actually, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Like, that shit just lives with you for your entire life.
I think, I don't know whether it was on the podcast here or not, but I found out that that was the Pointer Sisters. And I was like, yes. Holy shit.
Yeah.
I love that. Yes, Pete?
Definitely Sesame Street for me, although in my childhood there was definitely Muppet Show thrown in there as well as a bit of Fraggle Rock. Deep in my nostalgia memory recesses, the Fraggle Rock theme song, that's where that lives. Because I think there were a couple of video cassette tapes at my grandparents' house that had Fraggle Rock on it. So I really strongly associate it with a particular house that I used to go to as well. Yeah. But Sesame Street in the first instance, for sure. Mm.
I remember it being a very weird thing because I think Sesame Street for me as well, because it was, you know, what your parents would put you in front of. But then there was a particularly weird moment where you saw Kermit in Sesame Street and then he was also in The Muppet Show.
Yeah.
And it was like, what's going on here? How does he get to be Kermit?
I don't remember questioning that. No. I just thought it was connected.
Which, in a way, I think we need to now go back and reassess the world and say that the first cinematic universe was clearly the
crossover. I was just going to say the Muppet multiverse.
the multiverse of Muppet madness. I am so here for it. And you know that, like, in a small corner of the Muppet universe, there's a shack with an inventor and a dog, and underneath the ground are a whole bunch of Fraggles. Yeah. Yeah. And Karina asked the question, who wasn't raised on Sesame Street, though? I think most people, I mean, I guess outside of America, it wasn't going to be everybody. I don't know.
I mean, Sesame Street and Play School for me were on the same kind of level of importance in my in my tiny young brain. Like, they would be the two kind of top, you know, can't miss TV moments of the old childhood.
I was a little different in the sense that I loved Sesame Street with all my heart, and for a lot of the time, Play School could die in a fire.
Wow.
Yeah, I was like, oh, the good show's finished. Like, you got to the end of Sesame Street and that was the good show done, and then you had the boring show with the people.
What with Noni and John?
Look, in my later years, I came to realise... love John. Yeah, I realised how good Play School was, but as a kid, it didn't have all of that stuff that Sesame Street had. It was so much more simple and you know, yeah. The chat's all like, wow, Queen.
You just told Play School could die in a fire. Like, that's a lot. Like, we're a lot tonight. We've gone dark. We've come back. We've gone dark again.
We started with a Muppet, and now I'm a Muppet, and it's all happening, and I feel very bad about it all. But yeah, I don't know. It was just that thing, and so yeah, and also, am I right in thinking? Did we get it at both ends of the day? Was there a Sesame Street in the afternoon too, or am I imagining?
I only remember
that?
It in the afternoon.
Oh,
Well, hard to say. I was very small. Morning television that I remember watching, I would have been a little bit older, and it would have been morning cartoons. So that, like, yeah.
Right. Yeah, because I remember it very clearly in the mornings, but I wasn't sure whether there was an afternoon version of it as well. But this is the vagaries of Australian TV in the 80s. Fuck only knows when we were going to get whatever. So anyway, this is all to kind of come to, how did we get to Muppets and the creator of those Muppets, Jim Henson. And this is where we find ourselves talking about this documentary. Now,
yeah.
Did either of you know much about him as a dude?
Maybe not like as in-depth a history as they went into in the documentary, like definitely not about his personal life. But, like, I knew that he was the inventor of the Muppets and came up with the creatures and had the creature workshop and worked with Frank Oz and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So I maybe knew about, I don't know, 40% of what was in the show.
I struggled to kind of know that because I was like, as a kid, I loved them, so I wanted to know everything. You know, mm-hmm. I had all of the making of books and I had, you know, wanted to and see everything that I could that was ever about how they made Muppets and the Creature Shop and stuff like that. So as such, this kind of thing in a lot of ways is kind of like, oh, yeah, I knew that.
Yeah. Knew that.
So I'm always interested to see whether there was stuff in there for non-Muppet files.
I knew very little outside of the key kind of creative properties that are related to his work. So there was a lot in there that I found out and that I found, you know, kind of surprising in terms of where he started out creatively before, you know, moving into kids television, you know, like the experimental films, all of that kind of thing. I got a little bit of a kick out of that. You know, I wouldn't have thought as somebody who took zero interest in the man behind the Muppets, how he got to where he got creatively, which now that I think about it, of course I should have, because when you look at the breadth of work outside of kids TV that came from the Muppets and the, you know, Creature Shop and all of that kind of thing, it seems obvious now, but for me it was always like Jim Henson, Sesame Street, the Muppets, kids things. I didn't kind of look into it any further. So that element of it, of kind of, you know, understanding like a little bit more of like the creative drive behind what he was doing, I did find quite interesting. I found it a little bit triggering because I have been heavily involved in an archive doc about a creative person before.
Sorry.
And I was in charge of the archive on that doc. So, like, every time these archive sequences are flashing up, I'm going, no, so not. Who's keeping track of this? Oh, my God, the archive cue sheet. It must be enormous. Why?
This is not what I expected somebody to be triggered by, but there you go.
Triggered is absolutely the wrong word to use in that context.
We know what you mean, though. Okay, but I guess before we dive too much deeper, should we have a synopsis?
Yes.
I mean, it is what we do around here, and the Muppet is now on the ground over there, so we won't be having a return of Muppet Dion, but we will have some music. Okay. Ideas Man takes us into the mind of this singular creative visionary. From his early years puppeteering on local television to the worldwide success of Sesame Street, The Muppet Show, and beyond. award-winning, Academy Award-winning, sorry, Ron, filmmaker Ron Howard captures Jim Henson's restless creativity, ambition, and artistic evolution in the style and spirit of his complicated subject. There we go.
Oh, God.
Thank you. Thank you. I kind of had that thing of going, do I ask what people want? And I'm like, no, fuck it.
Is it weird to you that doing a Kermit impression is just by extension doing a Jim Henson impression?
100%. Oh, hang on. Shit, I've done the wrong layout. Ah, there. Sorry. This is the me show with you guys. It's the Kermit show with two smaller heads.
With his lovely assistants.
Yeah. sorry. If I can remove myself, that'd be, that'd be nice. Yeah, it is because when you look at it, yeah, 100%. Kermit is just Jim.
Yeah. I got to say, that trailer for the documentary really doesn't pull any punches in just idolizing and worshipping him, does it?
No.
I think it might even, I would hazard a guess to say, goes a little over the top in its idolization of him. He was literally a dude that did a job. And as cool of a job and as wonderful of a job it was, and as much creativity and passion as he had for that job, it kind of killed him.
Well, yeah.
Because essentially he was a, like, neurotic workaholic that, like, just left his health untreated and died so young, which was, like, so sad.
And on top of that, also made a pretty massive mess of his personal life.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That trailer is very sensationalist.
It certainly is the... I'm
trying to make people watch the film.
Yeah, I know. I understand that. That's the purpose of it. But, like, when, you know, coming out the other side of having watched it, you're like, wow, like, you get the insight into his personal life and who he was as a person, and, like, maybe the trailer is false advertising.
A little bit. And it's interesting because, like, me being the Muppet nerd that I am, I've watched quite a few docos and stuff, and there was one that came out in the late 90s, I want to say, that is longer than this one, and felt structurally almost exactly the same. And it's called The World of Jim Henson. I remember I saw it on TV at one point and videotaped it because I'm like, holy shit, this is amazing. And so I've watched it more than perhaps any other documentary I've ever owned. And this one's actually less kind to him than the other one.
Okay.
And I have to admit, even given that, I still felt it may have been pulling a few punches.
Agreed.
Yeah, I felt it may have been pulling a few punches. And look, that's kind of okay, because I did appreciate that it did kind of go into those elements of his personal life beyond idolizing his work, but you know, it's a hard balance to strike, I guess, when you're making a documentary with the purpose of you know, exploring somebody from that perspective and not necessarily an expose about all of their bad qualities. You know, where's the balance there? I wonder. So it's interesting to hear you say that, Quinny, that there was another document that had, you know, didn't get that balance as well as this one did.
Well, yeah, and I think you're both right. I think, I think it does show somebody who's not balancing their life right. But also, I do still think you're right. It is pulling its punches, because the person that the person that you talk to a few times, or you hear talk a few times in this, is his wife. Mm-hmm. And in the other documentary, she is almost entirely absent.
Right.
As she was from the work after she dared to have children and be a woman by the sounds of it.
But wasn't this documentary, wasn't it all like previously recorded interviews with her? It wasn't, there was nothing new.
Mm. So
they had all the children, but not her
speak
for this documentary.
Yeah, well, she died in 2013.
My apologies. I didn't realize.
It's
why.
Archive footage of her because, but also, like, there was a lot more in this one of her being pretty honest about, you know, things weren't great and it wasn't a great marriage. And she probably should have been afforded a lot more respect in the creative area and in the home area as well. I found some of the stuff with the family really good, like the kids. But yeah, there is always a bit of a feeling like we're not saying everything.
Yeah, I got that feeling.
And it's a funny balance again, you know, when you are working with the family. It's always a choice, I guess, with documentaries. It's not like it is a news expose. You get to choose what angle you take. But I do think that it's really interesting that we got a little bit of that information. I felt like it possibly wasn't everything and it wasn't dwelt on, but, you know, it's also like if they are, you know, working with the children and working with the family, there is also possibly an element of they're building a legacy for a person, not trying to tear one down. So, and, you know, we had a similar thing with the, you know, film that I worked on. Thematically, you have a you know, actually two brilliant artists, and one of them steps back to support the career of the other, and the one who steps back is the woman. And I noticed that, you know, kind of thematic link there, and I found that really
interesting. Can you say the name of that doco that you worked on? Because I think, like, it is kind of good to know who we're talking about in that creative sense.
So the name of the documentary is Whiteley, and it's about Brett Whiteley, the Australian artist, and his wife Wendy is also an absolutely brilliant artist, and was when they met, but, you know, stepped back from that in a way to support his career, and so I found that thematic link really kind of interesting, also because it's similar kind of era, I guess, of this kind of, you know, creative relationship. It's funny, there were actually kind of a lot of thematic links as well as similarities in devices that we used. And, you know, that might be the combination of it being an archive documentary and an archive documentary about an artist.
Structurally, they are just going to kind of perhaps be a bit the same.
Well, a little bit, but to that end, I have to say, just, you know, if we're going to criticize from a documentary perspective, I didn't personally love all of the devices that were used in this film, particularly some of the visual devices. I found a little kind of, I don't know, dry for the subject matter.
What kind of devices do you mean?
I didn't like the you know, square room CG projector screen thing that was the feature behind a lot of the interviews. It felt, I don't know, kind of boring and fake, and I just didn't. It didn't. When you're working with subject matter that you know is all about kind of art and creativity and it seems to me that that's that kind of like, you know, straight square gray thing didn't gel, didn't kind of, you know, gel with the rest of the film thematically, and it kind of and I'm like, I'm now nitpicking documentary stuff, which, you know, I shouldn't do.
I don't know. I think it was meant to represent television screens, but it...
Yeah, it was meant to, it didn't look right.
There was that, and then also pastiche with, like, stop-motion animation of, like, the chair that the interviewees are sitting on and that kind of stuff. I'm like, I get that this is a callback to, like, his experimental films and stuff, but, like, do we really need to go, like, that cliche? Can we just... do something that's like really tasteful and then leave all that other stuff to Jim Henson.
Yeah. It's an interesting one because, yeah, once again, I can't help but compare it to this other doco constantly. And in the effort to try and make this told in the style of Jim Henson, because that blurb was, you know, essentially Ron Howard trying to capture Henson's style. I'm like, I don't think you quite got it.
I also don't think you needed to do it.
Yeah. Dion's off to go on adventure on the Florentine Hills. Well, aww, have a nice time.
Nosh on some lovely wines, please.
Yes. Thank you for joining us, Dee. Like, I think it's going to be a very difficult decision what you do with the doco about somebody like this. You know, I think it'd be very tempting to say, fuck it, I'm going to do all of the interviews as puppets. I would love to have seen like a Muppet of Frank Oz.
It occurred to me while I was watching it, like, why aren't these interviewees Muppets? Like, even at points, that would have been kind of cool.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess then the difficult thing is, what do you do with all of the archive footage interviews? Like, do you Muppetize them? Or?
Well, not every interview. Okay, if every interview was a Muppet, you're kind of just making a Muppet documentary. But you could use it as transitions and then transition back into the real person. Like, you know,
do you guys remember that show? That show that was celebrity Crank Yankers, and it was all Muppets, and then they just like synced the audio to the Muppets talking.
Yeah,
they could have done it. They could have done that style. They could have had a Muppet and just like synced it with
sync the Muppet mouth movements to what has been said.
Yeah,
and create. And I mean, does that then make an entire Muppet documentary? Absolutely. Am I okay with that? Absolutely.
It's always like, you know, yeah, it's archive docs are really, really difficult as well visually, because you're always trying to think of how can we present this archive in a visually interesting way that isn't going to look like, you know, a 1995 PBS documentary. I think this had a lot of things kind of thrown at it visually, stylistically, and for me some of them stuck and some of them didn't. And I think what you said, Jill, you know, like a kind of more simple approach may have served it a little bit better, even insofar as, you know, fewer devices but stick with the ones that are working better. I also like one thing that really bugged me, the font and the animation style was so Pixar. And I was like, but that doesn't have anything to do with anything. I'm really confused now.
This fucking, I think it's Sanchez is the name of the font. Mm. It's on every Disney thing. I've noticed it in a lot of other stuff.
It really confused me because I was like, hang on, why does it look like Monsters, Inc.?
Yeah, it's the Disney template. It's the Disney template. They're putting it on everything.
Okay. I didn't notice that so much, but at the same time,
I found it so distracting. Every time a lower third came on in that font, I was like, "But why am I seeing the Monsters, Inc. font?"
Yeah,
and considering that the Henson brand is so creative and like has so many of its own styles and fonts and ways of doing. There are a few times I was like, this feels so much more staid than it could have been. Like, you know, visually, but then also I was fascinated by the stuff that they hadn't talked about previously, like, you know, him not being necessarily a great husband, or actually, no, him very definitely not being a great husband, but also not necessarily being a particularly wonderful dad either. And there was a point where Brian Henson was talking about when he worked on one of the shows. I can't remember which one it was. Was it Dark Crystal?
Yeah.
Where he was working alongside his dad, and it was basically the first time that he felt like his dad was seeing him as a person. Mm.
You've got to really read between the lines with some of the stuff that the kids were saying about him.
Yeah.
Which, again, and you know, I kind of, you know, I think that that's fair, and I think that it was probably quite sensitive the way that it was, that element was woven in.
Yeah.
Mm. And yeah, as you said before, Pete, they are also, and it sounds really nasty to say, but they're protecting a brand, mm-hmm. you know. And
I
that
mean, I
brand...
say building a legacy, which sounds less nasty than protecting. <legacy.
Yeah. laughs> Okay.
Same sentiment.
Yeah. Same different. Yeah. I'm just using a slightly nastier word, but.
But they are putting a legacy. It is both commercial and sentimental. I mean, if it's your dad, like it would be really hard to separate that.
Mm-hmm. And also the commercial, like the brand is sentimentality. You know, you've only got to look at the last couple of Muppet films, the Muppet Mayhem, the Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem show. Sentimentality is baked into the Muppets, or at the very least, the feeling of a time that is either past or can be re-explored. Like the idea that wasn't it great when we could sing and dance? And I feel like that's a thing that they really kind of play on. So it does then make me go, okay, so by protecting sentimentality, is that protecting what makes them them? Mm. And yes, Preda Kanga, I can dance if I want to. I can leave my friends behind.
And look,
but I don't want to because their screens are the same size as mine now.
There is more in here than sentimentality. You know, when you really look at the story, like I said, the things that either kind of surprised me or I knew somewhere in my head, but I'd never really thought about it properly. In terms of the advancements in that kind of storytelling, technically, and in filmmaking technically that came from his work, that's a really interesting thread in the story for me. The idea of that kind of creative drive to expand, you know, all of these concepts beyond advertising initially and then, you know, kids stuff after that to, you know, serious fantasy films entirely constructed with these incredible puppets and you know, it's essentially the creation of animatronics, which were, you know, a huge part of film for quite some time, and all of the technical advancements that have come from that. They're really, you know, there is a really interesting thread in there if you're interested in filmmaking just in general. And I feel like that's the element that I guess I expected less from in terms of being interested in this film. So I'm less, you know, interested in the personality and more interested in some of that, like, incredible behind-the-scenes footage of this stuff being created that essentially we kind of take for granted now, and remembering that that's where it all started and came from. That element of the story I thought was, you know, kind of cool and interesting and worth watching for that, even if you're not a big Muppets person.
Yeah. I love that stuff, and I always remember the first time seeing, because I suppose probably one of the things that I always latched onto was the fact that Henson was responsible for creating the Ninja Turtles in that movie. And seeing them doing puppeteering with their hands and seeing Ninja Turtle faces move was just like, this is amazing. Admittedly, that was, you know, that particular Venn diagram of Quinniness that was a very sweet spot. But yeah, there are beautiful things that I think they were trying. One thing that came out of this that I did enjoy or was intrigued by, I guess, because it's not enjoyment, it's a thing that was kind of sad, was how badly the impact of Labyrinth impacted the company and Henson himself. Because it tanked. It tanked really badly.
Critically and commercially.
And
which is bizarre because there's such cult classics now, that and Dark Crystal.
Absolutely. And, I mean, but this is, I guess, the definition of a cult classic, isn't it? You know,
yeah, failed miserably. Exceedingly well when they come out.
yeah. And then they find their feet on, VHS or through people going, oh, my God, you have to see this. And also David Bowie's crotch. You know, it's very important. not that that gets a mention in this. I think of all the puppeteering in this, the fact that nobody once mentioned David Bowie's crotch as a Muppet is very disappointing to me.
Yeah. Or that it's a love story between like a 1,000-year-old goblin king and a 14-year-old girl. But like, yeah, let's not get hung up on that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. The moment you even remotely scratch the surface on that, it gets so creepy. I love it because there's all these visual hints throughout the film as to why Sarah is thinking of the things that she is. Like there's photos of her mother with David Bowie on the side of the mirror and stuff like that. So the intimation is that this is her mother's boyfriend or something.
Gross. And you're like,
oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, no.
I suspect that I've never actually seen The Labyrinth all the way through. I suspect.
I don't know. How many different costumes have you seen David Bowie in?
I don't know. I have vague memories of pictures from this film from childhood, but like I think maybe I was just in the room while a little bit of it was playing and I suspect I haven't seen it. And I haven't, you know, so I probably should see it just as a cultural touch point. But I think that I was a little young when it first came out, obviously, and just never came across it again.
Yeah. The cult didn't grab you.
The cult did not grab me. I did, you know, yeah, there are lots of other elements that of the Muppet Cinematic Universe. It did grab me. I mean, we used to have a old VHS called Rock Music with the Muppets, which is how I was introduced to many rock songs of the era, which watching this film I have now realised were just the celebrity music segments from The Muppet Show cut together into one video called Rock Music with the Muppets. And it was basically like celebrities and Muppets doing popular songs of the time. So like a lot of songs that I hear now, like really big, well-known popular songs in my head, always Muppets.
yeah.
Like who's saying that? Muppet. Muppet. and Rainbow Connection was a song that my mum used to sing to us you know, to comfort it. I didn't even realize till later in my childhood that it was even Kermit singing that. It was my mom singing that when we were little kids, and we sing it to the to little kids now. So, you know, it, like, I don't know. It's so, I think, permeated culture and our lives in that way. That, you know, in when we talk about legacy, I actually kind of do think that there is legacy there worth, you know, worth not protecting, but worth kind of enjoying and looking at in this way, even if you don't like being made to watch documentaries in your free time.
So sorry. I feel like such such an asshole. What did you do? Well, yeah, made the documentary.
Baby and watched a watch a documentary when she was supposed to be having her relaxing time.
I'm sorry. So as a matter of interest, I and like for me, this is like asking what's your favourite child. But do you have a favourite Muppet thing?
Oscar. Oscar the Grouch is my favourite. Oscar and Slimy.
Oh,
Slimy. He's my spirit animal.
Amazing. Oh, Casper says Pilot from Farscape.
Oh, I mean,
Farscape was great, and those puppets were amazing.
Yeah. See, that's something, and I don't think they'd quite gotten to Farscape when the other doco came out, but that's the kind of thing that I wish that, like, because this one, much like the other one, ends very much with Jim's death.
Right.
But the thing is, the company kept going.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, has released heaps of more movies and has been involved with heaps of other, you know, things, properties, whatever.
And I think that was the one thing that I, you know, I didn't necessarily find satisfying, because I think in my head, because what was interesting me was the story of the technical advancements and the contributions to storytelling, that like the movie ended too early, because I wanted to see the behind the scenes of the Muppet Christmas Carol, which had some extraordinary visual effects. You know, in it, and you know, I wanted to see the, you know, continuing advancements going into things like Farscape and that kind of thing. So it's me, like, the Jim Henson story ended, but the legacy didn't, and I actually would like to see the rest of that story explored.
Yeah, because I mean, in the other doco, they kind of leave off on that note, which is the Jim Henson legacy and the Jim Henson company is actually possibly stronger now than it was when he was alive, because it's not reliant on one man. It is now a more sustainable business, in the sense that, you know, it can shift gears and it can say, okay, we're going to do ads, but we're now also going to do this weird sci-fi show in Australia, and we're going to pick up this like a weird contract to do Muppet character or puppet characters for something that you've probably never see before or ever again. But we can do that. And at the same time, we can also do a new series of Fraggle Rock, and we can do a spin-off TV show of Dark Crystal and all that kind of stuff. So it's sort of like this thing keeps going, whether or not that guy is still with it.
Yeah.
But I guess that's not a sexy narrative for like a guy who that has his name on everything. Man, I sound so cynical.
You are a little bit cynical.
Which is so not me when it comes to Muppets, because I fucking love Muppets and, you know, would love them all around me. But I guess there's a part of me that recognises that there's another element to it. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's very complicated.
That's what happens when you get to your 40s.
You have complicated feelings about Muppets.
The childlike innocence has died.
Oh, God. Well, I mean, we can talk more about Inside Out.
I was going to say, have you seen Inside Out 2 yet, Jill?
Oh, no.
Talk about that one later.
Okay, Casper is asking, is Muppet Christmas Carol the best Muppet movie?
Probably, yes.
I don't have a strong opinion on it, but it, like, yeah, probably.
Yeah, I think it probably is. I mean,
or
I really like...
Muppets Take Manhattan is also good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I really liked the 2011 Muppet movie, the one with Jason Segel, and that was a good, for lack of a better term, reboot. I mean, restart. I don't know what you call it. But yeah, I think, and once again, Muppet's Christmas Carol came out after Jim had died. It's funny. I remember very clearly there was a point just after he died in the 90s where they were like, so is Kermit going to be retired? Because like you said, Jill, there's like essentially that's just his voice.
Yeah.
And so much of it is Kermit is Jim. So there was a real question mark, you know, will they keep it going? And I saw a special, and I can't remember what it was. I think it was like a Muppet tribute to Jim Henson or something, where they did the whole show with no Kermit in it. And everyone was like, oh, Jesus. Oh, no. And then right at the end, all of the Muppets are reading letters from kids about Jim. And it's just heartbreaking. See, there I go. And then Kermit walks in, and it's like, oh, thank God. Anyway, there I go. I'm an emotional wreck. Okay, to compose myself, I think we should go to a clip and then we should rate this. I don't feel like there's no
we
spoilers.
We haven't left room for spoilers because there's no spoilers.
There's
this is
no
a documentary. I mean, you know how it ends.
Yeah, it doesn't really work that way. but we'll have a quick clip and we'll come back and we'll give it some ratings.
Okay.
Him 24/7.
You should be much more active. You can be running around.
His ideas came from excitement in him.
He said to me that from a very early age, he had the feeling that he was here for a purpose and a reason. And that was largely what drove him.
I feel like he came onto this planet and he knew he had a mission and a calling. He's like, gotta get it done, gotta get it done.
His schedule was so packed, New York to London to Toronto to LA. His drive was superhuman.
We have to keep going and you get to go home.
There was a restlessness. He was always doing, he was always creating, and he was urgent about it.
Wrap it up and get to the ending.
I've always operated doing a few things at the same time. And I find it very exciting.
It's just an incredibly busy life with a shocking amount of things that got done in every year.
Why he kept going so much, I don't know. There's no rule one answer, that's the trouble.
Yeah, and I think you make a good point there, Pete. There's that that gray room. And it's you know, Frank Oz talking about his best friend and co-partner in puppeteering in a big grey room. Anyway.
Yeah.
It's funny that element of narcissism that seems to precede creative genius. If you're very, very convinced that you're put on the planet to achieve something, then it may drive you to actually achieve it.
That's a very interesting point. Like, do you have to have a certain element of, ego or narcissism or whatever to be able to put all of the things aside? I don't know.
Yeah, it's certainly a personality type.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, alpha or whatever. Right, well, shall we rate this?
Sure.
And very difficult to do, I know.
It's hard. It's hard to do.
I'm
just going to go out there and say 70.
Yep.
It's a documentary. I enjoyed the subject. I don't know if I got everything I wanted from it. But what I did get was informative and enjoyable.
Nice. I think that's completely fair and totally, you know, it did what it said on the tin.
Exactly.
Pete, I
actually think 70 is fair. I really learned things that I didn't know throughout the film. You know, there were, like I said, there were some elements to it that kind of excited me more than other elements, and I didn't necessarily care for all of the devices and stylistic elements that were used. But I wouldn't say it's a bad documentary. I came out of it knowing stuff that I didn't know before, and maybe even curious to find out more about other things. Now that I'm kind of on the path of it, so I'm going to say 72. 72.
72. Right. Yeah. Okay. Oh God, it's very difficult because I need to separate my adoration of the subject matter and all of the elements of that, but structurally recognizing when it was good or not so good, and yeah, knowing when I am being told to feel a particular way as opposed to when I actually feel a particular way. And yeah, look, for me, I think it's about an 80, 78, because I was born then. But yeah, like there are so many times you see something and you think, oh God, that makes me feel good because it's a part of the show that I liked, or it was a thing that I've seen. But I kept on finding myself comparing to an earlier documentary that I actually think is a better piece of work. And that's a very, very difficult thing to do. And I kind of think, as you said right at the start, Jill, a filmmaker as good as Ron Howard maybe would have expected more.
Yeah.
But as you say, maybe he's a great filmmaker, not necessarily a great documentarian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like he's on the Disney books and they were like, hey, who can we get to make this with, like, you know,
yeah,
as little effort as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. We've got a big budget for all of the archive stuff, which we own anyway. So,
yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, there's stuff in there that I'd never seen before, which is cool. Some of the old ads and stuff that he'd made and parts of his short films. But yeah. Yeah. Elskinogger in the chat brings up that there's other docos around about it as well. Like there's I Am Big Bird, which is about Carol Spinney. There's Being Elmo, which is about Kevin Clash. So there's no shortage of docos around the Muppets. So, you know, this one probably needed to stand out perhaps more than it did.
Right.
That's my take on it anyway. Right. What are we doing next week?
I'm going next week.
Okay.
Cool. Up the town. Up the town.
Paul Mullen. Super Paul Mullen. And to the people who are like, what the fuck are they talking about?
Next week we are talking about another documentary series.
Yes.
Welcome to Wrexham.
Yeah. No, not Bridgerton.
Oh, no, Casper and I are having just a separate conversation in the chat. Don't worry about it.
Oh, okay, right, okay.
Whole side convo that's going on that you guys aren't involved with.
Oh, right, okay. This is about Bridgerton, is it?
Yes. Yeah, oh, okay. The second half dropped, so we need to catch up on that.
Yes, I watched that on my deathbed. It's good.
Oh no. Is everybody up to speed with their Doctor Who as well?
Yes. I need to have a discussion with you after this.
Yeah, I know, right? Oh my God. Last week we got Bridgerton in Doctor Who. This week we got something real big.
yeah.
It was crazy. There was a request to do Rainbow Connection as an outro. So we'll find out how shit this karaoke version is. let's just find out. Oh, there we go. And it's been a pleasure. We'll see you next week, where we will be going up the town with Super Paul Mullen. But tell me, why are there so many songs about what on the sky? Rainbows are visions, but only illusions, and rainbows have nothing to hide. So we've been told and confused to believe it. I know they're wrong, wait and see. Someday we'll find it, the rainbow connection, the lovers, the dreamers, and me. Thanks for listening to the Periodic Table Podcast. If you have comments, feedback, questions, or suggestions, email info@theperiodictableofawesome.com. From our website, you can find our Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook links, as well as ways to donate to the show if you're feeling generous. And of course, you can join in the show live on Tuesday and Friday nights on our Twitch channel. Until next time, stay awesome!